For this morning's exhortation, I would like to look at the Nazarite. And hopefully we will see that the principles behind the vow of the Nazarite are not confined to Numbers chapter 6. By the conclusion of our exhortation, I hope that we will see that these principles are illuminated throughout the entire Bible, and that each of us has the opportunity to be a true Nazarite. So who are some of the Nazarites in the Bible? Well, we have Samson, John the Baptist, and Samuel. All three of these were explicitly described as Nazarites from their birth. Each of their mothers was described as being barren before the promise of their birth. And each of these men were called into their position of service. Each of us has been given a similar calling. In 1 Peter 2:9, it says, "But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, and holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praise of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." Israel was declared a kingdom of priests at Sinai as the children were separating themselves to God. Exodus 19:5 says, "Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and hear my commandment, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. These are the words which ye shall speak unto the children of Israel." Peter had this idea of separation that is brought out in Exodus 19, and he uses it throughout the second chapter of 1 Peter. Back in verse 5 it says, "Ye are lively stones, ye are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ." God's house today is made up of people that have heeded this call. Today we have not been called to make animal sacrifices. Today we have been called to make spiritual sacrifices that are pleasing to God. So who could be a priest? To be a priest, you had to be of the tribe of Levi. You had to be of the sons of Aaron. You had to be between the ages of 30 and 50. The Levites separated themselves from their brethren to the service of God in the case of the golden calf. And as a result of God choosing them to take the place of the firstborn and to act as priest for the children of Israel, these chosen priests had to have two roles. First, they were to act as God's representative to the people, showing them how to behave in accordance with his principles. And second, they were to be the people's representative to God in terms of specific acts of sacrifice. In Leviticus chapter 10 and 21, God lays out the restrictions of what the priest could and could not do, which parallel the restrictions that were placed on the Nazarite. He was commanded not to shave his head. He was commanded not to touch a dead body, even if it was for his father or his mother. And he was commanded not to drink wine in the tabernacle or while in the service of temple duties. So who could be a Nazarite? It could be a man or a woman. There was no restriction on age. There was no restriction on tribe. I'm going to go as far as to say that you did not have to be an Israelite by birth. I think that you could have been a proselyte. Turn over to Leviticus chapter 19, and we'll start at verse 33. Here we see the warm embrace that the stranger should have received in Jewish society and the reason for feeling this way. Leviticus 19, verse 33. "And if a stranger sojourn with thee in the land, ye shall not vex him. But the stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born among you, and thou shalt love him as thyself. For ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." It does not say that they should merely tolerate them in the land. It says that they should love them, and that they should extend to the stranger the second great commandment that was given back in verse 18 and taught by Christ in Mark 12, verse 31. "Love thy neighbor as thyself." Proselytes could also take part in religious ceremonies. Look over at Exodus chapter 12. Here, Exodus chapter 12, they're talking about the institution of the Passover. Exodus 12, verse 48, "And when a stranger shall sojourn with thee, and will keep the Passover of the to the Lord, let all his males be circumcised, and then let them come near and keep it. And he shall be as one that is born in the land, for no uncircumcised person shall eat thereof." If the Moabite or the Edomite wanted to partake in the religious practices of God's people and were willing to submit the requirements that God placed on them, then I believe that they could. Anyone who was willing to undertake the vow of the Nazarite could do so. The previous three chapters of Numbers focus on the separation of the priests and of the people from the world in order to be holy and to be separate to God. The culmination of all these other acts of separation is in Numbers 6, which is the law of the Nazarite. Let's briefly look at one of the vows of the Nazarite. So what is the principle behind the prohibition on wine? Don't focus on the object or the letter of the law, but what is the principle that is being taught? As spiritual priests, we need to have a clear head to make right choices. I see the effects every day at work of excess alcohol. Some result in car accidents. Some result in injury from power tools. Some result in the slow destruction of our bodies. Sometimes it can be used to deaden pain of the mind or the heart. Sometimes it makes us think that we can dance better. Sometimes it makes us think that we can sing better than we actually can. Proverbs 31:4 says, "It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink. Give strong drink unto him that is ready to perish, and wine unto those that are of a heavy heart." Alcohol has its time and its place. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 7 says, "Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, and drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God now accepteth thy work." The principle is to have a focused mind when serving God. Also notice that in Numbers 6, verse 2 says, God tells Moses to speak unto the people. Contrast with this, with the instruction that Moses has from God concerning the priest. Most of the instruction given to the priest were commandments. Command Aaron and his sons. Command the children of Israel, saying, "Command thou the people." The vow of the Nazarite was optional. The participant had a choice. The whole focus of the Nazarite was to separate themselves from God, to God, from the ways of the flesh. Jeremiah 17, verse 5 says, "Cursed be the man that makes flesh his arm, and his heart departs from God." Luke 16, verse 13 says, "No man can serve two masters, for you will either hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." One of the mechanisms that God has set up to help us grow is our ecclesial family. There are many times that we have opportunity to strengthen and to support each other. There are also many times where we challenge and frustrate each other. It is during these times that we have the opportunity to put into effect the words of John's gospel. "This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you." If we want to be Nazarites, separation is often difficult because to do so, it requires us to move where we are comfortable, sometimes the place or way of being or way of thinking, to move to some place where we are not. To help make this process of separation easier, I'd like to focus on the positive aspects of separation. For us, this is separation to God rather than separation from the flesh. These things are polar opposites, so if we are moving towards one, we are moving away from the other. Let's think of a couple of examples that have to do with travel. Here's a negative example to be separated from something. Many people have to travel for their work. This requires them to leave their families and their homes for a period of time. They do not want to go, but they have to provide for their families. Yesterday, we saw an example of the positive, to separate towards something. a husband and a wife coming together to separate to each other. In the earlier stages of the relationship, this required travel, leaving home and family, familiar surroundings to be with the one that you love. What you are going to is made easier to leave the things that you are leaving behind. Now, no analogy is perfect. Both of these examples have positive and negative attributes. But hopefully thinking about the things that we have experienced or witnessed will help us to look forward to the separation that we anticipate in the future. The separation that will come at the return of Christ. As the bride of Christ, we want to be a part of that wedding. We want to separate to Him and leave the things of the world behind. So focus on the positive, and to be part of that separation is better to stay where we are. A brief aside regarding the wedding feast is that was prepared for us. So many people put in so much work, and it was very much appreciated. Last night, Kelsey said that everything was perfect. So thank you to everyone who came and everyone who was able to help. Now, the object of the wedding feast that really struck me was yesterday morning. Started to get a few text messages and Facebook notifications for people who were not going to be able to come. Many family members had fallen sick. This is flu season, after all, and they were not able to come and to be with us. And I felt sad because so much work had gone into the preparations that they were going to miss out. But the sadness and disappointment really wasn't for myself or for anyone else that was there. It was thinking that they were going to miss out and not going to be able to be a part of this fun event. And I was thinking there was like an hour before it started, and it's like, oh, we should invite more people, you know, that they could still possibly come. And that was what the father of the bridegroom was thinking when he told his servants, go out into the streets, there's still empty space, get more people, there's more time. This is the way that our Heavenly Father feels. He's put so much work and effort into the wedding feast of His Son. He wants all of mankind to come. And He has made this invitation since the beginning of creation. Many people have rejected the invitation, or they have had instances of coming and going and plans have changed. They will miss out. God tells us that He is long-suffering towards us. He is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. I believe that He is sad when they are missing out on the good things that He wants to give us. So back to the idea of separation. It was great that we were able to read Justin's letter this morning, and we can think of our own baptisms. So a personal example of exhortation, remember back to your baptism. If the events are a little fuzzy because of the passage of time, then think of the motivation behind the process. This was your commitment to start the process of being separated to Christ. I remember the day of my baptism. The services were held at Dave and Jerry Ann's house in their backyard. And it was fitting for two reasons, because we were still meeting at the Y, and it didn't have a baptismal tank. And the second was I had been studying with David, so it kind of made sense to finish the process where it had begun. My Grandpa Russell gave the talk, and James Walker did the dunking. As the evening started to wind down, I was in the backyard by myself. There was a beautiful golden sunset as the day ebbed away, and I was feeling at peace and excited at the same time. And I stood by the side of the pool, and I watched the ripples that were made by the pool cleaner, and the thought entered my mind, I could walk on the water. Clear, simple, and completely possible. And as I started to shift the weight off of my right foot, someone approached from the edge of my peripheral vision. And instead of stepping forward, I stepped to the side to accept the congratulatory handshake. I've tried to recreate this moment of confidence, but without success. If ye have faith as a grain of mustard seed, separation from the thinking of the flesh can empower us to move mountains. Baptism is a very important step in our separation to God. But it doesn't stop there. It continues throughout our entire life. Jeremiah 17, verse 7 says, "Blessed is the man that trusteth in the Lord, and whose hope the Lord is. For he shall be as a tree planted by the waters, and that spreadeth out his roots by the river, and shall not see when heat cometh, but her leaf shall be green, and shall not be careful in the year of drought, neither shall cease from yielding fruit. The three components of the Nazarite vow were a starting point for transforming one's thinking. If we strive only to act out the vows of the Nazarite, we've missed the point. An interesting contrast between the priest and the Nazarite, as we mentioned earlier, one was a commandment, one was voluntary. If you transgress the commandments that made you separate as a priest, most of the time, the result was death. If you were not able to keep your vows as a Nazarite, there was an opportunity to start over. You shaved your head, you started from scratch. The time that you had put into it, whatever time that had been set up, started over, and you were able to begin the process anew. Let's turn to our second to last reading in Matthew chapter 23. Here in Matthew chapter 23, Christ is very hard on those who were supposed to be separate and were not able to. But it wasn't because of their failure to be separate. It was because of their attitude. Matthew 23, verse 13. But woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye shut up the kingdom of heaven against men. For ye neither go in yourselves, neither suffer ye them that are entered to go in. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayer. Therefore ye shall receive the greater damnation. Woe unto you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye compass sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he is made, you made him twofold more the child of hell than yourself. Go down to verse 23. Woe unto ye, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye pay tithes of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought ye to have done, but have not leave the other undone. In my younger years, I thought that Christ was actually talking about three groups of people, the scribes, the Pharisees, and the hypocrites. But this is not the case. He is talking to the prominent groups of leaders that should have known better. They were following the law, the letter of the law, but had lost the understanding of the principles that the law was supposed to teach. Christ is not telling us to disobey the law of God. He is telling us to keep the laws of God, but to do it because of an understanding of the principles the law teaches. Samson was not able to perfectly keep the vow of the Nazarite. And even though he had been designated as a Nazarite from his birth, he had many shortcomings. But he is still listed in Hebrews chapter 11 among Gideon and Barak and Jephthah, and David, and Samuel. As of today, I cannot uphold the vow of the Nazarite as outlined in number 6, because over the last week, I have broken all three commandments of the Nazarite vow. I got my hair cut yesterday. On Thursday, I touched a dead body. And on Wednesday, I drank wine. My focus should not only be on keeping the letter of the law, but more importantly on keeping the spirit of the law and understanding the principles that it teaches. If I never ingest a drop of alcohol, but my thinking becomes polluted with hedonistic things to justify sin, then I've missed the point. If I let my hair grow long, but never elevate my thinking to that of my high priest, Jesus Christ, then I have missed the point. If I never touch an dead insect, let alone a dead body, but do not separate myself from the sin that leads to death, then I have missed the point. Our final verses will come from the end of Numbers chapter 6. So if you could turn back to Numbers chapter 6, verse 21. Numbers Number 6, verse 21, this is the law of the Nazarite who hath vowed, and of his offering unto the Lord for his separation, besides that his hand shall get according to the vow which he vowed, so he must do after the law of his separation. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto Aaron and unto his sons, saying, on this wise ye shall bless the children of Israel, and say unto them, the Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face to shine upon thee, and to be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee, and give thee peace. They shall put my name upon the children of Israel, and I will bless them. If the children of Israel were willing to separate themselves to them, to him, to God, he would bless them. So as we sing this hymn, which is normally done during baptisms, which hopefully we'll have the opportunity to do this next week, sing it unto each other. Sing it unto ourselves as the blessing that God wants to give us. This morning we have looked at some of the aspects of the Nazarite vow. And for the common person of Israel, the purpose of becoming a Nazarite was to emulate the character of the high priest. Our goal this morning, as spiritual Nazarites, is to emulate the character of our high priest, Jesus Christ, whom we now remember.